Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Wesley, Ray, and Ray's in Kansas City. We're in Tupelo, and we're joined now in studio by Steve Paisley Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
Steve, you got that Flower Child shirt going
on this
morning.
Yes, I
did.
This week. You guys were talking about the 60s earlier?
Yeah.
I'm just living it.
You're definitely. Can you see that, Ray? Can you see?
That's gorgeous.
Thank you. Yeah. Beautiful. It's in the mail, Ray.
Steve's rocking that set. That's kind of late 60s, early 70s. I don't know what you would call that, a mod shirt.
Circa 2025 on the internet, though.
it's beautiful.
Yeah, I like the colors.
Is it new?
It makes you dizzy if you look at it too long.
Fairly new.
So
I haven't seen it before is the reason I was asking.
Yeah, no, it keeps you awake.
If you look down, you're awake.
Sitting at my desk, and I'm falling asleep because I've been typing for a while. I look down and go, oh, there it is.
It's definitely a loud shirt. It's definitely so.
Now, I got to ask, though. I know we got to get the radio.
Yeah, but you go ahead.
Is this just for show or do you for today's issues, or do you wear that on Saturday?
No, Saturday. In fact, Fridays I generally dress a little less.
Yeah, he has a standard up pole. Yeah. You know, he needs to have some kind of fashion going on because I've set the bar.
Oh, yeah.
He's not wrong.
When I became began calling him Steve Paisley Jordahl.
We got a nice email from one of our listeners who mentioned and they put all our names like Tim. And mine was Steve P.J.
All right, because Steve's keeping Paisley alive.
That's right. One shirt at a time.
One shirt at a time.
So we're
about to talk about a subject that has been around for a long, long time in the American around the world.
Uh-huh.
It's the Shroud of
Turin.
All right. What set the stage for us, for those maybe who don't know exactly what we're talking about?
So for centuries, there has been a cloth that historically has been credited with being the burial cloth of Jesus, the actual Jesus Christ. And the reason that they think it was is because imprinted on this cloth is the image of a man who's been buried, and it has all of the telltale signs of someone who was crucified. And they've run it through all kinds of tests. They've figured out that it is from that right period. I was listening this morning to a gentleman that was talking with Tucker Carlson, who said that they have a lot of linen, if it's preserved correctly. They have some burial cloths that are 5,000 years old. So it's not unusual to have a burial cloth from that age. But what is unique about this is that it has the image of a man. And the way they think that it could have been put on this...
Why is it called... Excuse me if you're interrupting.
Yeah, no,
Before we hear Tucker Carlson just a minute,
yeah,
I want to ask you, Ray, why is it called the Shroud of Turin?
Well, supposedly the Shroud of Turin, and I only say supposedly because it's under investigation, is if it is indeed the burial shroud of Jesus, there's a trail that goes across history, but it ends up, I think, in Turin, which is where it is.
Is that Italy? Where is that?
Yes.
Yes.
Turin.
Yes.
Okay.
And the Roman Catholic Church has their people and their researchers have looked into this in great detail. And for a while, Steve, I can remember even 20 years ago, all the quote evidence was supposedly in the other direction, right?
That's
the
right.
Carbon 14 and all that. But now, now more, well, we just have a lot better science at our disposal now. And it looks to me like a convincing case can be made. It is a true burial shroud from someone who was crucified in the first century.
Not only crucified, but it has signs of like a crown of thorns, it has signs of the body being whipped.
Okay, so let's play this clip. Set this clip up for us and play it.
So this is Dr. Jeremiah Johnson. Johnson was on with Tucker Carlson. They were talking about this, and he's referencing a study by mathematician Bruno Barberis of the University of Turin. He's been one of the people looking into this, and they say they're pretty convinced that this is the real thing. Cut seven.
And he took all of the excellent questions you're asking me, the correspondence of how do we know he was crucified? How was he crucified? What blood type? Crown of thorns, nail print hands, nail scarred side, nail prints in the calcaneus, the heel, which is interesting. We'll talk about that. The scourge marks from, and then the patibulum abrasions, the cross beam. When he factored all of those probabilities together, Bruno Barberis, the mathematician, said there is a 1 in 200 billion chance it's anyone other than Jesus of Nazareth. 1 in 200 billion.
Because
I like my odds.
Because the physical, the representations in this image track so precisely to
with
the
scripture.
Accounts.
Well, I've never heard of a figure like that being used to.
Well, and this was new. I started looking at this morning when I knew it was going to be a topic.
So you've done a
program.
Couple hours of research on this, huh?
It was 5 minutes.
You are now our expert.
No, I'm not. Maybe more so than y'all, but not an expert. No, I was just my friend. And there, I'm sure there's an answer, but I wonder. Were there not others that were crucified in the same way that Jesus was? You know, so I'm just interested in how he gets that.
How do you answer that, Wesley?
Well,
Ray?
There were thousands and thousands of people who were crucified. It was the Romans' preferred means of execution for the worst of the worst. Now, to Steve's point, the question about the crown of thorns and stuff, if you're finding an image of the crown of thorns, that, Wesley, would be extremely unusual.
Well, I got even more of an unusual thing. So the image on the shroud is 2 microns thick. It's very, very thin. It's just a patina on this thin shroud. It doesn't soak all the way through. You can't see it from both sides. How does that get on there? What Dr. Johnson is suggesting that the image may have formed through a sudden chemical change triggered by an incredible burst of 34,000 billion watts of energy in just a fraction of a billionth of a second. Well, I don't know, possibly at the moment of resurrection? How did it get? It was imprinted somehow. It was imprinted onto this cloth. That wouldn't happen if the Jewish burial traditions don't have this cloth on the body for years where the decay would seep through. So,
okay, all right.
So this is how we're getting numbers so high. Okay, I'm tracking. Okay.
So repeat what you just said, because that would make sense. If you're trying to make the case that this is the shroud, this is the shroud of Jesus, mm-hmm. otherwise known as the Shroud of Turin, mm-hmm. which is a city in Italy where this is on display now. Can you go?
It is.
Can you walk into a museum and see this now?
I believe you can.
Didn't it go on tour?
It did go on tour. Yeah,
it did.
Okay, I thought it went on tour.
What
here.
I read this morning is that they only put it out for display at certain times throughout the year. So it's not just on display like the Gutenberg Bible at Library of Congress.
I got you. So tell us again the impression, is that what you want to call it, on the shroud.
Had to be imprinted on there somehow.
Yeah. So
I think we need to back up here.
Okay.
Because I'm going to play the audience here.
Okay.
We keep saying the word shroud like everyone. I didn't know what that meant this morning. Shroud, it's a cloth.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure everybody understands what we're talking about here.
Yeah, you need to watch Little House on the Prairie. More.
Or you need to read your Bible. Do you remember? Ray doesn't talk about the burial process.
It talks about the burial.
The women
burial
went.
Cloth.
to the tomb to put spices on the body, which they had wrapped, right?
When it says wrapped or cloth, I'm not saying the word shroud.
They mean the same thing.
Okay. Shroud is the English word for a burial cloth.
Yeah, okay. When you read cloth in the Bible, for example, that would mean...
So when you're insulting, you're insulting the audience here. I just want to let you know.
Am I insulting
anybody?
I'm just kidding. No, I don't think I am.
Go ahead.
But anyway, go. But my point is, I wanted to hear you say again what may have caused this impression, because you could have been talking about the actual
moment of resurrection.
Moment of resurrection, right?
According to Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, who is a person with he's with Christian Thinkers, he says the image may have formed through a sudden chemical change triggered by an incredible burst of 34,000 billion watts of energy in just a fraction of a billionth of a second, he says, possibly at the moment of the resurrection. Something photocopied that image to
That would explain it.
Yeah.
Right? Would that not explain it?
Okay. Here's a question, Steve, to turn around the other way. Let's suppose you want to say it's not the burial cloth of Jesus. Let's suppose you want to say it's not from the first century. Fine. Then you're faced with the question, that image that on the cloth is so remarkable. How did it get there? If it's a fake or a forgery,
right?
You're talking about a fake or forgery that happened 1,000 years ago, not something that's done with the high-tech instruments that people have today. Who could possibly have faked that so well that it's undetectable now 1,000 years later?
Even today, if it was a fake ray, they say that the... whatever chemicals they used to imprint it on would have gone through the shroud to be visible on the other side.
Let me ask you this, Ray. Sometimes the Catholic Church will make an official statement
or a proclamation,
a recognition of an individual. You know, because some people they saints, right?
Correct.
Okay. But they're called saints because of the Catholic Church. I'm talking about in the official sense, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Okay. Now, do they recognize this as the actual cloth of Jesus? Do you know?
I do not think that they have yet.
Official
Steve,
statement?
You correct me. I don't think they've made an official statement. But clearly, they think the evidence leans in that direction. Let me say, as a Protestant, as a conservative, as an evangelical, nothing in my faith is going to be troubled if it is indeed the true burial cloth or burial shroud of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's just one more confirmation that he really did die, and that he rose from the dead.
Yeah, it's not. I didn't mean to suggest that it's a Protestant Catholic division. It's not. Right. I just wondered the Catholic Church. Oftentimes, and they do a lot of research on things like this,
sure,
to be able to document it or not. By the way, have you heard any more, Ray, about the or Steve or Wesley about the Noah's Ark?
I remember the story. Yeah,
I did a story on it for us a couple months ago
in Turkey, or where in
Turkey,
in Iran,
Mount Ararat, on the Turkey side of the Mount of Ararat. I believe the Mount of Ararat is close to both those countries, but yeah,
now, I'd heard that. Go ahead, Ray. You were going to say.
Well, I'm only going to say we've been over there. Our people have been over there looking for a long time. There are tantalizing pieces of evidence to make us believe Noah's Ark was there, exactly where the Bible said it should be. It's an interesting question, Tim. What would remain of Noah's Ark thousands of years
nothing,
later?
Nothing, probably. The aerial shots I've seen, and I used to be real good friends, although we haven't talked in a long, long time, with a gentleman by the name of Bob Cornuke. And Bob Cornuke was a guy, one of the people, he used to travel in that part of the world trying to find biblical artifacts and relics and things of that nature. And he went on a trip over there looking for Noah's Ark. I don't know. I've forgotten. I don't think anything's ever been as you say, documented or settled.
Well, they're getting new technology now. So sure. This what I reported on was this thing called the Dhirupanar Formation in a mountain very close to Ararat, right. which would have been in the Ararat Mountains. Right. It would have been looked like one mountain to them. And what they're able to do now with technology that looks like ground echo or ground X-ray, basically.
Yeah.
They found layers and angles to the structure. They found a hallway, basically, going the length of this structure underneath. Now, it isn't wood anymore, but when...
if it ever was.
It would go for wood. What do you mean? You not believe the Bible? No.
Yes, but I mean, yes, I do believe the Bible, and I believe it literally, but I'm saying that if this... We don't know whether this is
if you buried a boat and you went back some 3,000, 4,000 years later, you wouldn't have wood per se, but you would have whatever the wood decaying leaves in the soil, the traces of wood. You could see the outline of it. In some cases, under some circumstances, trees can become what is it called? Ossified? What are those things where you...
Petrified?
Petrified. But in other cases, it'll decay, but then you will be able to see signs that there was wood. There was some kind of matter that wasn't native to that piece of ground.
Wesley, are you guys going up to the Ark Encounter again this year?
Yes, we're going up there at the end of October, 1st of November.
You're not going to Turkey.
Going to Kentucky.
Actually, you're right. We're not going to Turkey.
Where are you going? All right, what Ray's talking about is the Ark experience, that AFA at the Ark, right?
Yes, sir. This is our third annual trip there, and I hate to tell you just too much about it because it's booked. It's sold out.
Sold out?
We've been sold out for over a month, so we can't host anymore. But you need to be looking out for it for next year, because what we do is AFA and a handful of our staff members, including myself and my family, my brother and his family, and Tony Vitagliano and his family, we go up there and take 200 of our listeners, supporters, and we visit both the Ark Encounter and the Creation Museum over a two-day period. We also have dinner and fellowship at night in the afternoons. And so be looking for that for 2026.
Ken Ham's place.
Go
there. It's the most amazing place I have ever been in terms of looking for biblical. If you want to know what the Ark could have looked like, go up there to the big Ark and walk around.
Yeah. You guys should need to do a new Footsteps of Noah tour.
Mm-hmm.
Footsteps of Noah.
You guys are doing like the Footsteps of Paul.
That's right.
Well, Wesley and Walker are going on the Footsteps of Paul.
That's what I know.
Yeah.
I know.
In Greece next March. And we're going, also my wife and I, Allison, we're going to take folks to Israel. So, our trip to Israel is going to be full. I'm telling you, probably full in about another 4 to 6 weeks. It's much in demand, Ray.
Yeah.
There's pent up demand for people wanting to go to the Holy Land.
Yep.
And so,
I guess the most important question, Tim, is do you have a glamping option?
We won't be glamping by the Dead Sea. No,
that's right.
We'll be staying in a 4-star hotel.
Yes.
But I'm just saying that we've never had this kind of response this early before. And so I'm saying if people want to go with us to the Holy Land next March, you probably need to sign up in the next 4 to 6 weeks, because we're going to probably be full the way we're tracking right now. And for Wesley and Walker's trip to Greece, which we call the Footsteps of Paul, which is back-to-back with our tour of Israel, so some people are doing both. They're going with us to Israel, and then they're taking the short flight to, which we plan for them, from Tel Aviv to Thessalonica. They don't call it that.
Been messing me up this whole time. They call it Thessalonica.
You heard it anyway.
Yeah. That's the modern Greek.
But some people.
The Book of Thessalonians?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Some people are doing both. They're going to Israel, and then they're going on, while they're over there, going on to Greece with Wesley and Walker. So if you want more information on those tours, go to wildmangroup.com. WILDMONgroup.com, and all the information is there. WILDMONgroup.com for the tours of the Holy Land
and Footsteps of Paul,
which are next March. I'm talking March of 2026. And again,
you know, we really have made this an episode of the Travel Channel.
Yeah, we have.
We started with Yellowstone and the glamping.
Yeah, Ray, my pastor last Sunday was reading about glamping, and he thought that might be good for camping, but he coined a term called glurching.
Glurching.
Which is glamorous church, where people are sitting in the pews. They don't want anything to bother them. They want it to be comfortable without challenge. They don't want to have to work for it. No.
I know a lot of glurches. I've met a bunch of glurches in my life.
Yeah, so he preached, obviously, he preached that that's not such a good thing.
Sure.
Yeah, but yeah, that, I thought that was an interesting take on that word.
You know, I know you're Pastor Ray for many years, but I always didn't quite understand about messages directed to Christians that are hypercritical, which we all need to hear those from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But the pastors are preaching them to the people who aren't there.
That's right. That's always a temptation to preach a bold message to the people who are not there, right?
We need to increase our church attendance.
Why punish the people who came?
Well, we're here, Pastor.
they wanted to be there.
Right. Just get a kick out of that when the pastors preach sermons.
Yeah.
Every pastor has done that.
I know, to people who aren't there.
I'm not talking to you, but if you know Joe and Susie, go tell them.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, I've left services sometimes where you feel beat up, and I'm going like, why do I feel beat up?
I'm here. I was there. I was doing my
right. Part. I do certain nursery duty every month.
That's right.
Get
That's
off my back, man.
You're yelling at me. I didn't do anything.
That's a bad attitude to have, huh? Anyway. All right, Steve, we got about 3 minutes left here.
All right, let's talk about we want to make sure that we don't leave too big of a carbon footprint here. And Bill Gates is helping us with our diet. Bill Gates is making butter from carbon. Using carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, he's getting butter, which kind of explains why I feel like I can gain weight from just breathing, because all of these are in the air. Somehow he has managed to combine these and cook these in such a way
So you're telling me Bill Gates has a show on the Food Channel now?
I don't know if his show is on the Food Channel, but his butter might be some point.
So he's all right. This is a real news story.
Yep.
Bill Gates, the guy, Microsoft guy, right?
Yeah.
One of the richest men in the world. He creates his own butter.
Well, he's backing a company called Savor, S-A-V-O-R.
They don't churn it, right?
No, they cook it somehow.
So what's in there? What's in there now? Ooh. Tell me again.
Carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. Scientists say the recipe is made up of fat, water, a touch of lecithin as an emulsifier, and natural flavors.
Why do you do something like this?
Because it's so much easier on the environment. You're not.
It's an environmental thing. What does it taste like?
Give us.
Well, you can make anything. Right?
Not like it sounds.
I think we need to run this past RFK Jr. to see if it is maha friendly.
Butter, make your own butter.
Sleep.
No,
huh? I can't believe. Yeah. Anyway,
it's not butter.
Yep. Instead of farmland fertilizers and cows, Savor uses an industrial process to turn carbon dioxide from the air and hydrogen from
water.
Give
me some real butter.
So the other option is do what Ray said.
I'm with you, brother.
And just use butter. I said the other option is just do what Ray said. Just use butter.
Just use butter.
Yeah. give me the real thing.
I don't think this new recipe for butter by Bill Gates is going to catch on.
No.
I can't believe it's not butter.
If it goes on Shark Tank, it ain't going to make it.
No, they've tried a handful of things that are supposed to complement or replace butter over the last couple of years, and it's not working. They're going back. Now it's like go back and get the most original butter possible.
Yeah. Give me the real thing.
We need the three B's: butter, bacon, and barbecue. Can't do without.
Come
those.
On now, come on.
That's what would make America healthier.
That's right.
Make us great again. Make us healthier.
Butter,
again.
Barbecue, and what'd you say?
Bacon. Can't have too much bacon.
Yeah, bring it.
I think everything in moderation is perfect. So yeah. I support this.
Bacon, I don't think you should eat in moderation.
No.
I think you need to go
full board.
Three or four pieces.
Yeah. Have more.
Yeah, and if they're more. The thin one, you got to go six or seven.
Yeah.
Well, you say full boar. Boar is a pig. You probably could get bacon from boar.
Boar or more.
And on that note, we shall close out this show today. And my thanks to Ray, Westy, Chris, Steve, Adam, Sandy, and whoever else was on the show today. We'll see you tomorrow.